I probably wouldn't. Okay, Brishos, my father. I want to publicly thank Hashem for helping me to make shirim. This week's shir was a little bit of a nace. If you like it, then I certainly thank Hashem for helping me bring it together in a very last minute kind of way. All right, so tonight's topic is also obviously this shir should be for Refuah Shlema for my brother-in-law Chaim Yisachar ben Chaim Mushkit, who's currently in the hospital, but Baruch Hashem doing okay. And we should continue to daven for him and have him in mind when we learn. So tonight's topic is money and materialism, and specifically its connection to Pekudei, to Parshas Shkalim, and of course to Purim. So we'll start with source number one. The pasuk tells us, "Eila Pekudei Hamishkan Mishkan Eidus." Right, these are the countings. This is the enumeration of everything that we've been learning about in all these parshios: Truma, Tetzava, Kisisa, Ve'akol, Pekudei. So much of it centers around the Mishkan, and we know that there's a difference between the word Eila versus Ve'Eila. Whenever the Torah uses the word ve'eila, it's coming to be a hemshech of that which came before. It's a continuation. Ve'eila shemos. So now you're about to start book two. It's really book two of Bereishis. Right? I think the Bahag even calls it Sefer Sheni. Shemos is part two of Bereishis. Like the Netziv describes in his introduction to Shemos. Right? But Eila, on the other hand, comes to posel, comes to discredit something else. So says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, what exactly is happening? Eila pekudei. Right? This is an accounting that's worth taking to the exclusion of something else. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh in source number 2, Eila Pekudei, Omer Eila Lifsol Kol Minyanim Shavolam. This word Eila comes to discredit any other counting in the world. Anytime you're going to sit and you're going to be counting, right, sitting there with your checkbook and making a cheshvon, right, it's all worthless. Why? Ki Kol Ma Sheyimna Adam Mikinyanim HaMedumim Ein Minyano Minyan. Anything that a person thinks, he thinks he's counting important things, he thinks he's secure, and he knows exactly what's in his bank account, and he's checking it, and he's making sure, and he's making moves with his stocks, and he thinks he's in control, but the reality is, all of that counting, and all of that amassing of wealth, is really worthless, as the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. V'shemo Morela, he's quoting, he's paraphrasing from the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, that the name that we give for money, in fact, is a reminder to us how worthless money is. Right? What is that? The Medrash says Mamon. Why is it called Mamon? Ma'atamona. Mamon is an abbreviation for Ma'atamona. And the Medrash says the same thing. It says the same thing is true about Zuzim. The same thing is true about Nechasim. The same thing is true about Ma'os. The Medrash says all of these things are abridged forms. Hi guys, are abridged forms of expressions discrediting the value for money. Aval minyan ze omid la'olam. But says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh that this counting is a counting that's going to last forever. Right? When a person takes his money and turns it into something spiritual, you dedicate it to the Mishkan, you dedicate it to Avodas Hashem, you put it into the Mikdash, you got to hear a little bit of it. A little chazar is good. So that's a counting that lasts forever. Right? You're dedicating it to a higher cause. Lios minyan ha-mishkan ha-mufla asher shachin sham elokei olam Hashem. You're dedicating that money to Hashem, and now that money has new purpose and new meaning. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is telling us, you know, again, we like to imagine that all of the things, all the possessions that we have are so valuable, but the reality is, right, the reality is it's only money that's spent in Avodas Hashem and dedicated towards mitzvos and Torah that is truly valuable. And I was thinking this week, right, the whole concept of money is very interesting. There was a time when currency, when things that were used, you know, as money, had more of a value to it. A person would have coins that were made out of precious metals, or stones, which is also kind of silly if you think about it. You know, why should a diamond? It's just a shiny rock. But okay, it's rare, it's precious, it's more unusual, so it has a value. Nowadays, currency is such that we're on a paper currency. It's a piece of paper. It's not even backed. You know, it's what's called representative money. It's not even real currency. It's not backed by anything. Right, on some level, it's backed, obviously. But it doesn't, you know, because it says 100 on it, it's worth $100. I can get $100 worth of goods for it. Why did Hashem allow, perhaps, why throughout history did Hashem allow us to eventually come to this state as the Geula was unfolding, as world history was unfolding? Why is it so important that now, at the end of days, we're using a paper currency that's not really backed by anything? So I thought the idea is, again, it's a reminder to us that sometimes we lose ourselves so much. We'll talk to the end of this year how this is in many ways the avoda for our generation. But we lose ourselves in the money. We're so obsessed with it. We're so busy with it. And it's a reminder to us it's nothing more than a piece of paper. Just take a look, stop for 1 second, and realize what you have in your hand. You have a piece of paper, and the goal is that we turn it into something much more real and much more meaningful. Obviously, the word tzaddikim, as we always do, we like to look to the tzaddikim to guide us. The word tzaddikim, who were totally detached from money. I put this next source in, not to be sexist, Although some might take a little offense to it, although I think there's some truth to it. Right? You'll see what I mean in a second. In source number 3, the Sefer Yamos Olam, which is written by the Rebbe of Amshinov, Zatzal. So he says that, he's describing Rav Yaakov Aryeh Avradzmin, the Chassidic Rebbe. And he says he was so detached from the world that he didn't even know what money was. And again, I'm not chas v'shalom insulting the Nashim Tzidkanios, but look what he says. He says, "Kol kach hay harav kadosh miradzmin mufshat mehavayos ha'olam." He was so detached from reality, so detached from the world. Achay mechana lamos. He used to call money, and I'm not going to attempt. I'll attempt the Yiddish. The golden zachin was the viber frein zich. Now, what does that mean? He used to call money those little gold things that women like so much. Right? Now again, it's really not sexist. If you ask my wife, she'll admit that she likes to shop more than I do. She's more comfortable with the golden azachin. Right? But he didn't even know what it was. I put this in just to show you there are people to give us just a spiritual perspective of, you know, the level that Tzaddikim had. There was almost a fear, they were uncomfortable with it. When the altar of the Vardik was a young man and he was starting to gain a little bit of fame. So they used to say, and it's brought down in the Sefer Giants of Jewelry, Volume 2, it's brought down there that they used to whisper about him, there were rumors circulating that what? That he didn't even know what currency was. He didn't know anything about money. That was like a very chashuv praise of him. He was so detached from all of us, he didn't know what money was. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, so his wife used to run a store. He didn't even know where the store was in the town. That's how detached he was from it. You know, and this was the level that the Tzaddikim were on. And if you think, again, this is something that sounds extreme and a little bit absurd, the truth is it has its basis in the Gemara. The Gemara describes in Psachim, in source number 4, a person who is known as Benon Shel Kedoshim, son of the Holy One. Right? So the Gemara says, Ma Ninu, source number 4, Ma Nihu, Benon Shel Kedoshim. Who is this one who is known as Benon Shel Kedoshim? The Gemara says, Rabbi Menachem Bar Simai. Why did he get this title? Am I curry leg? Banan Shel Kedoshim. Why was he called this Holy One? The lowest stackle, but Surta Dezuza. Because he never looked at the image on a coin. So Tosfos, in several places in Shas, and this is the more mainstream approach in the Rishonim, what's the Pshat? Tosfos in Shabbos, Kuf Memtes, says that the Pshat is that he didn't look, you know, the Torah says in Vayikra Yotes, you're not supposed to stare at graven images. So they used to have coins. There was a graven image on the coin. So he was so careful to remove himself from any chashash of Avodah Zarah, he wouldn't even look at coins. But I saw some bring down, the Sefer Lishmo Bilimudim brings down, he says, what's the pshat? It wasn't just that he's distancing himself from Avodah Zarah, which will make a connection to money later in this year. But he didn't even want, he was so detached from money that he wouldn't even look at it. It was a shmirah for himself to remind himself not to become infatuated with wealth. Which again is something that even in the times of the Gemara, people were struggling with. This is not a modern day sickness to be so obsessed and overly concerned with money. So that was the level of some tzaddikim. It's obviously an unreal level. Something that's probably very far removed from any of us, I would imagine. Not to chas v'shalom accuse anyone of being overly involved in physicality, but I imagine that level's pretty out there. Now you had other tzaddikim who weren't, you know, they knew what money was, they'd heard of it. Rav Shalom Shvadron and others, you know, these are people, they had heard of money, but still they were fearful of it. Rav Shalom Shvadron would never take money, but he would give shira. One time someone slipped into his pocket a check for 1,500 lira, which was a big sum of money at the time. And when he found it later, he was trembling. He ripped it up. He threw it in the garbage. His nephew happened to have been there. He took it out. He pieced it back together and framed it and hung it up on his wall. This as a reminder to himself, you know, what a person can attain. But the deacon were scared of money. They were very uncomfortable with it. You know, the good Purim story, the Stifler Gaon. Stifler Gaon was known as someone who he would never take presents from anyone. You couldn't buy him anything. And it became almost like a game, who could be a chacham enough to trick the Stifler Gaon into giving him a present. So there was this one fellow, this fellow by the name of Rabbi David Frankel, tells the story how his father tricked the Stifler Gaon into taking something. His father owned a textile factory, and the Stifler had a coat that was very worn, and it was just very unbefitting for a Gadol B'Yisrael. And he very badly tried, you know, he wanted to give the Stifler a new coat, so he had this beautiful new coat made. But he knew if he tries to present it to the Stifler, there's no chance he's going to accept it. So he's thinking, what can I do? How could I? It's almost Purim time. So he decides, you know what? I'm going to wrap my shalach manos in the coat. I'll take the coat, I'll make it into like a basket, I'll put shalach manos in there, and I'll give it to the stifler, and maybe he'll fall for it. Right? Not fall for it, but maybe he'll accept it. So he comes, he shows up on Purim, he's got this ridiculous looking coat basket, and he brings it to the stifler, and the stifler's either son or grandson came to receive it, he brought it into the stifler, and the stifler accepted it. Now, it still wasn't done yet, because it's, you know, is he going to wear it? Is he going to, maybe he'll give it away? And there was a big, you know, a little while later came Pesach, the first night of Pesach, the stipler walks into shul, and he's wearing this new coat, and you see in the back of the shul, you see this, the father of David Frankel, has got this big smile on his face, you know, I can be on like the scoreboard of people who tricked the stipler into accepting gifts, but there was this intense fear, right, this desire to just be detached from Olam Hazeh. And the truth is, it's very much related to Purim. Right, we'll talk more about Purim later, but, you know, some asked, the Samar Rebbe was once drunk on Purim. One of the Hasidim, Rav Sender Deutsch, tells this story. Samar Rebbe was drunk on Purim, and he asked the following question. He said, why is it in the 8th parak of Megillas Esther, Hashem, you know, does all these things to make sure that the house that belonged to Haman is given to Esther? Why should it be that the house of Haman goes to Esther? Why couldn't Hashem help Esther and Mordechai come into some money on their own and build themselves a nice Jewish home? They have to dafka move into Haman's house? This is a question the Samar Rebbe asked on Purim in a somewhat drunken state. So he said, B'derech Tzro, somewhat jokingly, he answered, he says, think about it. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have given the money to Mordechai and Esther, in their simplicity, they're going to build themselves a small little house, they're going to give the rest of the money away to Tzedakah, but Hashem felt that they really deserved to live in a nice mansion. So Hashem made it come about that they would dafka get the house that had belonged to them, this big fancy mansion, and that way Mordechai and Esther would get the covetic lifestyle that they deserved. But you see, on every level, the greats, right, they were fearful of money. They were fearful of possessions. And the question is why? So part of the answer is, the Gemara in Chagiga tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked at all the Midos Tovos in the world. Again, you may not consider this one of the Midos Tovos, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked at all the Midos Tovos in the world, and the Gemara in Chagiga, Daf Tesam and Beis, says, it's not on the sheet in front of you, it says that Hashem decided that the best Midah for the Jewish people is to be poor. Is to be poor, Anius. Of all the Midos Tovos in the world, Hashem decided, and the Gemara has a statement, it says, poor for a Jew is like a red stripe for a white horse. Right? Meaning not only is it something that's necessary, but it's beautifying for the Jew. When the Jew is left in a difficult situation monetarily, it's beautiful for a person. It's beautiful for the Jewish people. Right? What's the pshat? The pshat is that if you understand how dangerous money is, you start to understand what Chazal are talking about, you start to understand what all these tzaddikim are concerned about. Right? You know, we like to imagine that being rich is the greatest bluff in the world. There's an English comedian, Spike Milligan, who joked one time. He said, the only thing I doubt, he didn't say daven, but he said, the only thing I daven for is that I should be tested, you know, I want to learn firsthand that money doesn't make a person happy. Right? Like, I want that nisayon. Right? Let them prove that on me. I'll be the test case that money doesn't make a person happy. I'd like to experience that firsthand. Right? But who says that being rich is good? You know, we assume if a person's rich, that's the biggest bracha in the world. Who says that's the biggest bracha in the world? On Motzei Shabbos, many people recite, Hamavdu ben Kodesh L'chol, Chatosenu hu yimchol, Zareinu v'chaspenu yarbe kachol. Hashem, make our children, make our zera, right? Make our zera and our kesef as numerous as the sand. So the Vilna Gaon took offense to that song, and he changed the text of that song. The Vilna Gaon's version of that song is Zareinu v'zichu yosenu yarbe kachol. The Vilna Gaon thought it was inappropriate to say, who says it's so good to have so much money? That's a good thing? That's a big bracha? Someone even once came to the Vilna Gaon and they asked him, they said, you know, we want, give us a segula that our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren should all be from Jews, Yari Shemayim. Right? What's the one guaranteed way to make sure that that's going to happen? You know, is there a special parak of Tehillim you recite? Is there a Daf of Gemara I should memorize? Tell me, what's the segula? So the Vilna Gaon said, and this is scary, the Vilna Gaon said to this person, he said, when you're davening, when you're saying Shema Kolenu, insert the following into your tefillos. You should say, Yihi ratzon milfanecha, Hashem elokai velokei avosai, that my children should not be rich. Daven that your children... Now, this is not to say, God forbid, that a person who's rich is not a pious individual. You can still be rich and be God-fearing. Such a concept does exist. But the Vilna Gaon saw it as a real threat to a person's avodas Hashem to have too much money. Right? To the point that, you know, you should daven against it, almost. Right? And again, most of us would imagine, you know, say, okay, well, halavai, we should have such an isayon. Right, you know, especially those of us who are in chinuch. Right, you know, it's. I find myself when I say Hamavdu ben Kodesh L'chol on Motzei Shabbos. Since I learned this thing from the Vilna Gaon, so I say Zareinu v'zichu yoseinu. No, but once in a while, if the bills are a little high, I slip it. You know, like an article sitter where it says say in an undertone. Right, so you say in an undertone. You say Zareinu v'zichu yoseinu. Right, v'chaspeinu yarbe kachol. A little extra wouldn't hurt. And there's a thing circulating on the internet a little while ago. I think it was fictional. You know, a couple people went out for some drinks, and they were sitting around, and one guy was the head of a hedge fund, and one guy was a big hotshot lawyer, and they had this one friend who was a teacher. So they said to this teacher friend, you know, they were talking about what they make, and I make this much money, I got this bonus. So he said to the teacher, "Nu, what do you make?" Right, so this is like this one of these very cute things, because teachers need a lot of chizuk in this regard. Right, so they said, "You know, what do you make?" "Oh, well, I make kids think, and I make kids smile, and I make the world a better place. You know, what do you make? You know, you just make money." I go, "Okay, but once in a while, zareinu v'chaspenu, shikol kaspenu is sometimes necessary to pay the bills. You can't pay the bills with cute stories circulating on the internet." Right, but the bottom line is the Vilna Gaon understood that it's dangerous. It's a dangerous thing. When a person has too much money, it could destroy a person. It could literally destroy a person. And the Torah makes it very clear. And the Torah sends a message and tells us just how blinding the effects of money can be on a person. Chavetz Chaim describes, right, in the Pesukim in Shoftim, where it describes how a judge has to be so careful not to take any type of bribery. So Chavetz Chaim describes it in the following way. He says, you know, Lamashal, if a person goes over to someone and says, "That guy is really rich, so I have no way of judging. I don't have an understanding of what the person's statement means until I know who the speaker is." Right? If Bill Gates is saying about someone, right, if Chavetz Chaim used the example of the Rothschild family, right, if the treasurer for the Rothschild, the guy in charge of the bank accounts for the famous wealthy Rothschild family, comes and says that this person's very wealthy, so okay, now we're talking real money. But if some poor person comes over who doesn't have a penny to his name, says that so-and-so is so wealthy, you're so rich, okay, he has nothing, you have $50. So you're not so rich relative to the person who's speaking. Chavetz Chaim says the same thing is true by Chochma. If a person comes over and says, "Wow, you're such a genius," right? So again, you know, who's talking? Is Rabbi Akiva Eiger calling you a genius? Is Shlomo Melech calling you a genius? So the Chavetz Chaim says, take a look what happens. The Torah writes in Parsha Shoftim, be careful of bribery because it'll make a person who's what? Who's very wise, who will blind the person's eyes. Yavir einei chachamim. Says the Chavetz Chaim in source number 5, Uma'ata tzevech hashov. In Mekadosh Baruch Hu bekvodo ba'atzmo. Meir al adam shu chacham. When the Torah is calling someone a chacham, that carries a lot of weight. You can't even begin to imagine how smart that individual must be. Someone who Hashem calls smart will still be damaged by a bribe. That's pretty scary. Right, we're not just talking about someone who, you know, who we might call smart. Someone who Hashem has confidence in, and yet Hashem tells us, He looks into our hearts and He says that even the most yashar, the most righteous, the most knowledgeable individual, the most knowledgeable, fair and honest shofet, will be led astray by Shochan. Hashem is telling us this is a fact. Right? And again, the Chavetz Chaim spells it out. It's not just, you know, what the people are calling. It's not what Shlomo Melech is calling smart. It's what the Rebbeinu Shlomo Bechvodu V'Atzmo is calling smart. And that's how dangerous the money can be. What a temptation it could be for a person. That again, even someone on the highest levels of Chachma can be led astray by it. And we sometimes imagine, like many Midos Raos, we imagine that eventually we'll outgrow it. Right, this is certainly one that you don't outgrow. If anything gets strong, you know, my daughter thinks that every coin is tzedakah. She calls money tzedakah because that's all she knows money to be for. Right? Your money, tzedakah. That's unbelievable. As we get older and certain realities set in, right, so we become more and more concerned with this. And again, sometimes for the right reasons, right, but sometimes it takes over. So we have this false impression that, you know, eventually I'll get over Olam Hazeh. I won't be so obsessed with Olam Hazeh. Person can be on his deathbed and still hanging on, clutching on to his possessions as if he's going to live forever. There's a sefer, Ateres Shlomo. It's written by the grandson of the Teferes Shlomo, or Shlomo of Radomsk. So he tells the story how his grandfather one time, he walked into a Beis Medrash, and there was this fellow, this big lamdan, who used to stay up very late every night. He'd stay up through the night, and he would learn three blot of Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, really in depth. Right? But the Teferes Shlomo recognized about this fellow that he was very obsessed with money. And he made the following joke about this guy. Right? You know, you can see the wisdom of the sages is sometimes in their jokes. He said the pasuk that we have a bunch of times throughout Shemos, they have it in the end of last week's parsha, source number 6. Va'adonim la'amudim, nechoshes, vavei ha'amudim, v'chashukayim kesef. He says a person can learn vavei ha'amudim. A person can learn 6 amudim of Gemara. He can learn 3 blot of Gemara, and yet still chashukayim kesef. And they still have a longing for money. Right? You can learn and learn and learn. That's not going to help you break this Yetzer Hara for money. A person has to become, you know, aware of it, be focused on it, and then find ways to not be blinded by it. Because that's exactly how Chazal are describing it. That's how the Torah is describing it. It will blind you. It will take over your life. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov was always bothered by the question, you know, how is it? How do we allow Olam Hazeh, which is so small compared to the infinite Rabbeinu Shalom and the infinite Torah, how do we allow such simple things to block out such a big light? To block out the Rabbeinu Shalom. A person once came to Rav Shlomo of Lutsk, the Divros Shlomo, and said to him, you know, Rebbe, I really want to be a good Jew. But you know, sometimes Olam Hazeh gets in the way. So he said back to him, he said, how do you allow such a small Olam Hazeh to block out an infinite Rabbonu Shel Olam? So this is exactly what Rabbi Nachman of Breslov is asking. How is it possible? How do we allow such a big, you know, world of Ruchnius to be blocked out by such a petty world of Gashmius? So Rabbi Nachman explains very beautifully in source number 7. It's from the Likutei Moharan. He says, Ahu kamashal hamuva. He gives the following mashal. It'll make perfect sense to all of us. Kamuva matbeya katana. If you take a small coin, imtachsik osa negere necha, if you place it right up against your eye, yimne milheros har gadol. It'll block out a huge mountain behind it because of its proximity to the eye. Afal pisha har gadol. Even though the mountain is thousands of times bigger than that matbeya katana. And yet somehow that little coin is able to block it out. Why? Because it's so close to your eye. Therefore what? It blocks out the eye from seeing things that are infinitely bigger. So it's not by chance. And this already Mefarshim on Rabbi Nachman of Breslov point out. It's not by chance that what? That Rabbi Nachman picked a coin. Why didn't he say if a person puts his finger over his eye, if a person puts a piece of cloth in front of his eye, why did he daf use the mashal amatbeya in front of your eye? Because there's nothing more blinding. There's nothing that's going to block out spirituality than what? Than money. Than an interest and an obsession. Right? And an obsession with money. The Ramban has a... You know, the Paras Yosef writes in the back of his sefer, he says, he has a tradition from the Ramban. His rebellion dating back to the Ramban, that if a person gets any hana from something, so then it will blind the person to view it objectively. That means if you're trying to decide if something's mutter or asr, if you have even the slightest bit, this is a tradition he has back to the Ramban, that if you have the slightest bit of personal gain from it, you'll be able to come up with a svar. Your brain will work in such a way that you'll be able to matir that which is asr, or asr that which is mutter. Your brain just takes on a whole new level of existence when a person involves himself in money. Even if you don't even know that you have the money. There's a scary story. The Heichal Bracha brings down a story from the After Rebbe. That one time he was sitting on a Din Torah, and he's sitting there and he's trying to judge fairly, and all of a sudden he keeps being nogeya to one side, and he says, I have to withdraw myself from this judgment. I can't sit on this beis din. And they said, why? What is it? He says, I don't know. I'm having a hard time being objective. I need to withdraw myself from this beis din. And he withdrew himself, only to find later that day, he went to his coat, and he saw that one of the people involved had placed a sum of money in his pocket, with a little note, you know, thank you for taking your time to judge, right? And here he was able to feel from a distance. Again, he was obviously a spiritually great individual, but he was able to sense that something's wrong. I'm not able to judge this case objectively, based on money that in his pocket that he didn't even know about. You know, so all the more so when we're involved, when we're mind and our body is totally involved, it's totally sunken in Gashmias. Right? There's so many studies, secular studies done on this topic. I've mentioned some of them in the past. You know, like the famous the bottles of wine, you know, one's labeled $10, $20, you know, $40, $90, and the $90 bottle of wine is the same as the $20 bottle of wine. And all of a sudden you say, oh, this is such a good wine, right? You know, because as soon as you think it comes with money, it comes with value. Money equals value to us. Right? And as much as we like to imagine, you know, I would never fall for such a thing, I would never get caught up in such a thing. In 2000, I was read a study in the book I was reading recently. They told a study from the year 2000 where doctors were asked about certain benefits they got from pharmaceutical companies. And no offense to the doctors. About certain, you know, benefits they were given. And if they think that that affects some of their friends in the decision making when they're prescribing things. So 84% of them said, yes, we believe that our friends are influenced by it. So then they asked the doctors, you know, do you think that you're influenced by it? And only 14% thought that no, certainly not me. Right? I would never be blinded by money, God forbid. I'm able to talk about people's lives here. I'm talking about prescribing medicine. Right? And yet the reality is that, of course we get caught up in it. So obviously the Torah can't expect us. Right? The Torah will never expect of us to live on the level of these tzaddikim. I mean, certainly it's something to strive for. Right? But the Torah understood that man was created in a way, we're human, we're drawn to these things. And the Torah even builds into its system a way to function with this. The Torah expects us to have a desire for money. Take, for example, the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. Right? Aser to Aser. We're told, give a small percentage of your money to tzedakah. The Midrashim there all talk about how Hashem is being very generous. You know, for us it seems like a lot sometimes, but for some saying, I'm asking for 10%, maybe. Right? Not asking for very much. And yet, what's so funny is that Chazal Darshan on that pasuk, Aser to Aser, Aser b'shvil shetis Hashem. Give money to get rich. So says the Karbon Ani in Parshas Re'eh, he says, Since when does the Torah recommend doing things for rewards? Isn't that one of the basic principles of Pirkei Avos? Do things l'shma. Don't do it for the reward. And here the Torah is Dafka setting up a system, how to handle your money, do it for the reward. So the Karbonani, Rav Yaakov Katina, says, you know why? Because the Torah acknowledges that there's zero chance that you're going to be able to detach yourself from money completely. So the best the Torah could ask of you, you know what? Try it low lishma. And then maybe, slowly, slowly, you'll come to a level of lishma. But you see that the Torah was sensitive to this. The Torah understood how much of an obsession this is for us. How much time we're going to put into it, how much thinking, how much of our life is going to be focused on possessions and money and acquiring more and more. So the Torah tries to wean us off of it, right? Give lo lishma, and you'll get the money back. And then over time, you start to realize, you know what? Hashem knows what He's doing. He's working out the money. Everything's going to be okay. And we slowly, again, we begin that process of releasing that addiction. Well, some svarim compare the taiva for money to like drinking salt water. Like drinking salt water, it just gets, the more you have, the more you want. It just doesn't end. You have the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara describes the famous machlokes. Brachos Daf Lamed Hey, the machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and Rishon Bar Yochai. Right? Should a person work? Or should a person just learn? Right? A very important machlokes discussed in many circles in a variety of ways. Everyone's rallying behind whichever position they stand behind. Right? Rabbi Yishmael says a person has to strike a balance. There has to be some type of balance between earning and learning. And Rishon Bar Yochai says, you know, if we spend time in the fields, what's going to be with the Torah? We have to just learn. We have to just learn. I think Mara says many tried to be like Rishon Bar Yochai and were not successful. But again, the Torah acknowledges, even the Torah itself, right? You think this is a later machlokas. The Torah itself acknowledges that what? That the level of Rishon Bar Yochai is for Yechidim. That the average person does need to have some money in his life. And the goal is going to be to control it in the right way. But the reality is, as the Nefesh HaChaim points out in source number 8, the Torah prescribes, it sets up a system that the average person is going to need money in his life. What does it say? With all of your money. It's written in what? Lashon Yachid. Uveparsha Vahaya, but in Parshas Vahaya, which is written in the Rabbim, in the plural, Loksiv Uvechol Me'odecha. It doesn't say, right, in the plural, give away all your money. Why? Ki Parsha Shema Kula B'Lashon Yachid Nemra. Because Parsha Shema is said entirely, the first Parsha is said in the singular. V'yachid she'efshalo hu'tzarech l'chaim l'chaim lo yamash sefer Torah zemipicha. An individual who's capable of spending his entire day involved in Torah and trusting that Hashem will provide for him. So there, yes, there will be yachidim on the planet who can live that way. Right, dvarim kichsavan mamish, to live that way, uvechoma odecha mamish, to give away everything, like it says in the Mishnah Brachos. However, the second parsha, right, about parsha v'haya shenemra b'lashon rabim, l'rabim kima'at mechrachim l'sasek al kopana ma'at gam b'revach hamamon. For the masses, people need to involve themselves in money. That's the reality. The Torah accepts that reality. So the question becomes, if we're going to be involved in money, if we're not going to be like Rav Yaakov Aryeh of Radzmin, who didn't even know what money was. Right? So then the question becomes, so how do we interact with it? How do we engage ourselves with it? So the Torah gives us advice, right? And that's going back to where we started. The Ruach Haim HaKadosh told us, dedicate your money to a higher cause. Take that piece of paper and elevate it. Right? It's an unbelievable opportunity that's being given to you. To take something, you know, we always talk about a person should live within his means. When a person takes paper and he turns it into an eternal mitzvah, into an eternal merit for himself and his family, right? So that's living beyond your means in a very positive way. You're taking something that's very limited and you're making it infinite. And the reverse is also true. What happens when a person takes nothing more than a simple piece of paper and turns it into an avera that's going to sit with him until he does tshuva for the rest of his existence, right? It's a disaster. And unfortunately, that's the reality at times as well. In source number 9, the Yalkut HaGershuni of Gershon Stern, Hungarian Rav, so he writes in his commentary on Sefer Hosea. I don't know very much Navi, but for some weird reason I got into Sefer Hosea. It's like my Sefer on a plane. When I go on a plane, I bring a Pirkei Derbi Ezer and I bring Trei Asar Hosea. So I found the Alkana Grishuni. I took it with me one time on a plane, and he has a lot on Hosea. Not too many people have good Vartlach on Hosea. But he writes the following. He says, V'kesef her basi love is zav asu laba. Right? What does it say? It says, I gave the Jewish people, Hashem says, I gave the Jewish people money, I gave them kesef, and they offered gold to Avodah Zarah. Explains the Yalkut HaGershuni, Ratzalomer, Anin Nasati Lam Kesef. I gave Bnei Yisrael Kesef. V'lo Daibachi Suni Lasos Habami Kesef. It wasn't enough for the Jews to worship Avodah Zarah with silver. You know what they went ahead and did? Ki Yimei Adagon V'Atirosh V'Yitzar V'Kesef. All the things that Hosea is describing that were given to the Jewish people. They took all those things, and what did they do with it? They turned it into gold. They sold it all for gold, and then they went and they worshiped Baal, the hither of Era. Right? So that's the opposite. Again, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is telling us, take the paper, take the money that you can't take with you. Ma'atamona, mamon, ma'atamona, what's it worth? And turn it into eternity. And God forbid a person could take that money and drag it down the other way. You can make it into an eternal suffering for a person who takes the money and turns it into a real avodah zara. So again, this is the challenge that we're being faced with, right? To take it and to use it in the right way. Who's a good example of this? Take Avraham versus Ephraim. Right? Avraham and Ephraim, they're sitting there, they're doing a little business. This is a good case study for Jewish business versus the Ephraim mind. Right? So they're doing a little business, and Ephraim says, you know, what's 400 shekel between us? And Rashi has such a funny comment. Rashi says, it's not on the sheet in front of you, right? Beinu beincha, between the two of us, what is it? So Rashi says, bein shnei ohavim kamono, mahi chashuva l'klum. Between two people who love like us, right? What's 400 shekel? Since when do Avraham and Ephraim are such, they're such lovers? They're so close? They're best friends? Right? They have anything to do with each other? They share the same values? What does it mean, bein shnei ohavim, like us? What does that even mean? So I saw the Spinker Rebbe from Eretz Yisrael, from Bnei Brak. He quotes from the vision of the Rebbe in source number 10. He says, you know what it means, bein shnei ohavim? He says, Hainu, she'avram haya ohavas Hashem yisbarach b'chom odo. Avram loves like no one else. You know what he loves? He loves Hashem. He'll give away all his money. No money in the world is worth anything to him in the face of a mitzvah. And Ephron's the exact opposite. Right? Ve'ilu Ephron haya ohav kesef kol kach. Ephron is so obsessed with money that any amount that he's being given is considered very small. Because, you know, Avram, 400, I'm giving you a good deal. Right? Because I've got my eye on billions. Right? So that's what it means, bein shnei ohavim. They both love, but they don't love the same thing. Avram loves the opportunity to take money and turn it into something so much loftier. And Ephron, unfortunately, is the opposite. Right? Ephron sees money for what it is. If anything, he's going to use it to turn it into the pleasures of Olam Hazeh. Right, let's connect ourselves. I can see the clock has been moving very fast these last few weeks. So let's go to Source 11. Let's connect ourselves to Parsha Shkalim. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu is told, this week's Parsha, we read the Shkalim in addition to the regular Parsha. Right, Moshe is told about the half shekel, and he's not sure exactly what this half shekel is. So Yerushalmi tells how HaKadosh Baruch Hu took out a matbeya shel esh, right? Hashem took out a coin of fire from Tachas Tisei HaKavod, and he showed it to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, Kazeh Yitnu. This is what I'm looking for. Explains the Noam Elimelech in Parshas Kisisa, source number 11, we'll take it from the fourth line where it's bolded. What does it mean, a matbeya shel esh? A coin made out of fire. So it's exactly what we're describing. Right? What is fire? Fire can be the most constructive thing in the world. It can be one of the most necessary things for a person's survival. And at the same time, it can be the most destructive thing in the world. Says the Noam Elimelech, Dehainu, she'isnagu im kaspeyam kazeh, shu'esh mitachas kisei hakavod. Look at money when you interact with it. Look at it like esh. The esh sorif, the esh mechamin. Esh can destroy, it could burn, and esh can also warm. And if you use your money in the wrong way, it'll destroy a person. But if you use it for tztaka, believe shalim, then you turn it into a mitzvah. You take a coin, you take it back up to the kisei hakavod, take it to the highest levels of existence. And he says that's obviously the bracha, that's the hope that each and every one of us should be able to live in such a way. Yaakov Avinu was someone who spent his life in the Beis Medrash, right? And now he's going down to Lavan's house, and he's going to be involved in money, and he's involved in possessions and animals, and he needs a little bit of a training course. So what happens? He's lying there on that mountain, and he has this wonderful dream, and he sees this ladder reaching from the ground to the heaven. Right? What's going on? What's this whole idea of this fascinating dream? So the Baal Turim has a very famous remez that he cites in source number 12 on that dream. The Baal Turim points out that Sulam is Gematria Mammon. That ladder is teaching him a lesson in economics. Right, to learn a little something about money. You're on your way to the house of Lavan. There's going to be a lot of business dealings to be busy with over there. Learn a thing or two about money. Right? Money's like a ladder. How is it like a ladder? So the Baal Turim says, right? It's Gematria Mammon, it's Gematria Oni. It's Gematria the guy who's rich and the guy who's poor. Kizei Yashpil v'zei Yarim. There's ups and downs in money. Right? Some people are born very wealthy. Some people struggle their whole life. This is the reality of how money works. And the Medrash Rabba, awesome, but Midbar Rabba, the next source, tells that a certain woman once asked, Rishum ben Chalafta, what does God do with his time? Right? How long did it take God to create the world? 6 days. Okay, what's he been doing since then? He makes ladders. What's the pshat he makes ladders? Now we have an understanding what a ladder represents. A ladder, Sulam Gematria Mammon, Sulam Gematria Oni. What's the idea? So Pasha Pshat, again, it's the latter. You know, some people are on the top of the rung, some people are on the bottom. Different people have different portions in life. But I was thinking, when I read this Noam HaLemech, I was thinking, you know what, maybe the Pshat in this Medrash is that what? That money could be a ladder for the same person. It's not talking about two different people. It's saying that how you interact with money could be something that brings you to the highest highs, or it could bring you to the lowest lows. And then, and this is why I thanked Hashem at the beginning of this year, Hashem helped me to find, I was flipping through the back of the Divrei Yisrael of Mudgets, and I saw that he says this pshat in Source 14. Hamamon atzmo hi mala lezev yirid lezev. The same amount of money. We're not talking about different economic brackets. Someone could be in the same category as someone else, and he's able to elevate that into a kisei hakavod, or he's able to allow it to drag him down and to destroy him. Right? And again, it's all a question of your perspective. How do you use the money? And that's the other medrash. That's the other medrash the Baal Tur makes reference to, and the other remez that he cites in that very same piece in Source 15. He says sulam, spelled the way it's spelled in the pasuk without the vav, is gematria zek kisei hakavod, because that's really the hope, right? Just like to take that matbeah shel ish that we're going to read about this Shabbos, the shekel, and to bring it back up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, to elevate it back to the highest heights. And I want to for the last 5 minutes, I want to talk a little Purim, because money definitely plays a major role in the Purim story. And as I was putting together this shiur, I realized this maybe should have been the whole shiur. So I'm just going to give you a little taste of something that I think could definitely be developed here. Right? Again, the role of money throughout the Megillah is very pronounced if you're looking for it. Achashverosh is obsessed with money. Haman's obsessed with money. Right? You don't see it maybe necessarily as much in the text, but you read the Midrash and you read the Chazal, the Gemara, you see how much money is involved here. I'll just give you one or two quick examples. Achashverosh's party. 180 days. Why 180 days? Clearly the Pesukim describe, you know, the extravagant ball that he's throwing for the people. But why 180 days? So the Vilna Gaon says that Achashverosh inherited 1,080 otros, treasure houses, from Nebuchadnezzar. That was the source of his wealth. The Medrash describes how he got it. He had 1,080 storehouses of treasure. And the Pasuk describes, when it describes Achashverosh's wealth and his splendor, it says it's Osher, Kavod, Malchus, Yikar, Tiferes, Gedula. Six different expressions are used to describe his wealth. So the Vilna Gaon says, let's think about this for a second. He has 1,080 treasures that he wants to show off, right? And it uses six different expressions, alluding to the fact that he brought out six each day. So how many days should the party last? 180 days. 180 days. Six treasures a day. 1,080. So you see that the whole structure of his party was built around what? Showing off his money. Right? And Haman certainly also is someone who's very much aware of his monetary standing. The Gemara says in Megillah and Tesvav, it says that he calculated, he had all of his money. Chakukin alibo. He knew exactly how much money he had. Some of the Balei Tosfos say he had a necklace where he recorded. He used to write down every penny he earned. Right? He was obsessed with his money. And there's so much, you know, throughout the Purim story, there's so many references to the money playing a role in the story. So I just want to uncover one little nekuda, and to do that, I'm just going to go back to the beginning of time. Go back to Adam HaRishon. Because if you go back to Adam HaRishon, you realize that what was Chet Eitz Hadas? Let's go back, let's get to the root of all sin, because it's very much connected to money. Right? She sees the fruit, it's very desirable to her. 99% of what you have is yours, enjoy the garden, but there's one thing you can't have. But I want that one thing, I want more. Right? The Medrash says a person who has a million wants 2 million. 2 million wants 4 million. A person's always going to want more. So what was the penalty? What was the punishment, so to speak, after eating from the Eitz Hadas? So some say it awakened a sexual desire in them. Some say it was a knowledge of good and evil. The Avraham Avinu said it awakened this irrational desire for luxuries that people are going to suffer from forever. So the tikkun for Eitz Hadas, the thing that we're working on to bring Mashiach, to bring the Geula, is very much what? Is being metaken this desire for luxuries. All sin is rooted in a desire for money. The Mishnah Berurah is describing how on Yom Kippur, some people on Erev Yom Kippur have a minhag to do, you know, to do Malchus. So the Shulchan Aruch says you're supposed to face the north. Why face the north? So some say, well, it's just because you don't want to have your back to the Aron Kodesh, or, right, from east to west is not good, so south is also fine. But the Mishnah Berurah writes, he quotes the Taz in the second line, in Source 16, you should dafka face the north. You know why? Because most sins, the majority of sins stem from money. And the Pasuk says in Eov, that money is the root of problem, and money is somehow connected to the north. So you face the north as you're getting your malchus to remind yourself that most of the mistakes you made this past year have to do with money. So that's the tikkun that we're working on. And that becomes Haman's downfall. Right, the Gemara in Megillah says Haman's about to issue this great sum of money to Achashverosh to buy out the Jews. But the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a plan. And he was hiked in the shekel of the Jewish people, right? He was hikdim the refuah to the makkah. He gave us a way, the antidote, to fight back before Haman ever came along. And that was the shkalim that the Jewish people donated. And therefore our money, right, beat out his money. What does it mean? Tosfos has a whole cheshvan to show how it's a precise amount of money connected to his money. But even more simply, it's the fact that we take our money and we turn it into something like the Archaim HaKadosh told us. You give it to the Mishkan. You turn it into a matbeah shel eish tachas kisei hakavod. You do something meaningful with it. As opposed to how much he's using it to kill and to destroy and to uproot the foundation of the universe. To continue the avodah of who? Of the Nachash. Which is exactly who Haman is. Right? The deeper Svarim describe how Haman is nothing more than a Gilgul of the Nachash. It says that Haman is Rashi Tevos, hu Mishoresh Nachash. He comes from the Nachash. Pasuk says in Navi, Mishoresh Nachash Yetze Tzefa. Out of the Nachash comes a Tzefa, a viper. Tzefa is Gematria Malik. There's many connections between, you know, Adam Arishon is Mordechai, and Esther is Chava. There's a whole, you know, you can have, there's plenty to say about it. And again, we don't have time for it right now. But again, the simple idea that what? That our shekel beat his shekel. Our ability to use money in the right way is the tikkun for the Eitz Hadas. And therefore, Tosfos tells us in Source 18, Hakesef Nasanach, he says, Gematria de Hakesef Ola Ha'etz. Remez lo sheyitlalav. Hakesef is Gematria Ha'etz, says Tosfos in Mesechus Megillah. Right? Because the Kesef that he wanted to use ended up being his downfall. What's the Eitz that Tosfos is hinting to? He's hinting to the Eitz Hadas. He's bringing us full circle. It's the tikkun of the entire universe. The Gemara in Chulin says, where is Haman hinted to in the Torah? From the pasuk of Eitz Hadas, Hamin Ha'etz, Asher, right? The tree that I told you not to eat from, you ate from. Because that's the Haman mentality. And therefore our mission is to be metakin the Eitz Hadas. And that's what Purim is all about. And just to give you one final piece, really one final piece, and then we'll break for Mar, for those just only to daven. We're in the ikvus of the Mashiach. We're at the end of time. Right? We're the ones who are trying to seal the deal to finish the tikkun of Adam HaRishon, to bring us full circle. And again, I don't have time to get into the whole thing now, but we know that Yaakov Avinu was what? Was the spitting image of Adam HaRishon, that's what the Gemara says. And we also know the deeper Svarim describe how Yaakov and Esav are reincarnated as who? As Haman and Mordechai. What is Mordechai's mission? Not to bow down to Haman. Why? Because Yaakov did bow down to Esav. And the Svarim talk about how Purim is the tikkun of the raglayim, right? The thigh that was struck by Yaakov, the legs that were so much damaged, that bowed in the wrong way, that were struck by Sarah Shal Esav. And again, this theme is a much bigger theme. I really should have just made this the whole shiur. But the concept of raglayim and Purim. Famous Pachad Yitzchak about dancing on Purim. Using your raglayim, right? The gorel that Haman makes. Gorel is the same letters as raglayim. Haman walks around Mordechai. There's so much involving the feet. It's a way that we get our feet back. The minute to stamp your feet, dafka, right? By Haman. Belzer Rebbe said, that's our way of reminding our enemies, if you try to get us again, we're going to run. Right? But okay, the feet play an important role in the tikkun for Purim. And therefore, if you just go to the final source, right, go to the last two sources, let's say. Again, I'm out of time, but the Chidah says in Source 20, he says the 6,000 years of Jewish history are broken up into three major averos. The first 2,000 years, we're going to struggle with Znus. The next 2,000 years, we're going to struggle with Avodah Zarah. The last 2,000 years, the final stretch is going to be a struggle for the Avodah Zarah, known as what? As money. And therefore what? Therefore what? Purim is a tikkun of the feet. A tikkun of the feet. The ikfas of the Mashiach, the legs. Right? Us at the bottom of the body, the bottom of the goof, working so hard to bring us full circle. To bring us from other Shani back to Nisan. To bring us literally through the entire calendar year, through the entire the history of the universe. So the Gemara says in Pesachim, in Source 21, Veskola yekum asher baraglayim, am Rabbi Elazar zema monu shel adam shemamidu al raglav. Money is something that stands us on our feet. When a person has the right perspective of money, then he's able to bring a tikkun. He takes the gorel of Haman and he establishes the legs. He rebuilds the leg of Mordechai, the injured leg of Mordechai, right? And he brings a tikkun to the chayt of Eitz Hadas, which again is so much connected to Adam and to Haman and to Mordechai. And there's obviously much more to say here. So Mirtz Hashem, we should all be zocha. This Shabbos, as we read about the matbeah shel eish, to be the types of people who take that matbeah, whatever it is that we've been given, whether it's a lot or a little bit, but realize that wherever we are on that ladder, it's an opportunity to take that money and to turn it into the kisei hakavod, and not, God forbid, to use it in the wrong way. Shabbos. Shkoyach. 10:01.